administrative support, financial support, insurance for the ITF, so the ITF can go and do their work, which is basically developing standards, and they don't have to worry about all the legal structures and administrative activities. So you can find more information about all our activities on our website, and there's also a link again to the workshop portal for all the education material that has been presented during the workshop last week, and all other, you know, there's a lot of education material, a lot of tutorials on that website that you can use to go home and maybe, you know, go around and educate others in your, or provide information to others in your country. That was all that I had to say. Are there any questions at this point? Otherwise, I'd like to hand over to Lucy.
On. Okay. Hi, I'm Lucy Lynch. For those of you who didn't meet me earlier in the week, I am from the University of Oregon, and I work with Steve Huter in the NSRC. I am also a longtime IETF volunteer. I've been volunteering in the IETF for about 10 years. Started out doing operational stuff, and now I'm doing what I consider housekeeping, administrative things. I'm going to talk a little bit about participating in the IETF Internet Standards process. We really want to encourage people to participate, but I'm here to tell you that it is not totally easy to do so. The IETF is the Internet Engineering Task Force. It was formed in 1986, so we just celebrated our 20th anniversary. The IETF is a producer of Internet standards. There are several. Some of you know the ITU or the W3. There are several bodies whose standards. Traditionally, the IETF produces standards above the wire and below the application, although with the advent of things like MPLS and VPNs, what a wire is changing. The development process is open to anyone. You can participate in the IETF by joining any working group mailing list. Once you've joined the mailing list, you are part of the IETF. All the documents that are produced, the internet drafts, the RFCs, the best common practices, are freely available. The RFC editor website has all of the documents. Many of you have probably either read an entire RFC or a chunk of one referenced in a document. Does everybody know what an RFC is? Sorry if this is basic, but IETF standards become standards only because they are used, when and because they are used. There is no formal recognition of the IETF by any governmental body. It is recognized by the people who actually implement and use the standards. Interoperability is key in vendor applications. So they participate in the process, and then they implement the standard. Contributions to the IETF are all considered to come from individuals, even though people may be working for a company and paid for the work that they do to implement the standard. It's considered an individual contribution. And if you look at drafts written over the years, you'll notice that some people have written a number of RFCs, and there are employer changes over time, but their participation in the IETF does not. Down at the bottom it says rough consensus and running code. That's sort of the motto of the IETF, and it means that we try to get agreement and that something has to actually work. There has to be an implementation that you can prove works for something to become a standard. Actually, there have to be at least two successful implementations for something to become a standard. This is a recent quote from Brian Carpenter, who is the current chair of the IETF. This actually was an ISOC interview. The IETF is a large, open, international community of network designers, which includes engineers, operators, vendors, and researchers. Those researchers include students. We have lots of college students who are committed to the architecture, evolution, and smooth operation of the global internet. Operators is a key thing here. There are not enough operators in the IETF. If you're an operator, I really encourage you to join. It is a fundamental principle of the IETF that the decisions in any working group are reached by consensus on the group mailing list. This is important. Decisions happen by email. There are three meetings a year. Those meetings are spread across the globe. Not everybody can attend every meeting. Decisions are not made at the meetings because everyone's not there. Decisions happen on the mailing list. If something happens at a meeting and it requires a decision, it's taken back to the mailing list to be finalized. This means that anyone who is active on a mailing list can be part of the process. Oops. Jumping ahead. So it sounds easy. You join a couple of working group mailing lists, which is where the work is actually going to happen. You read the drafts, including the drafts that have already come out of the group so that you have the background and know the key terms. And you read the list archive. Then you start to ask some questions. If you don't understand a term, if you don't understand why the work has progressed in the direction it has, ask questions. Talk to people. As you begin to read the list, you'll see who it is that's an active talker. You may want to take your conversation off list if you're catching up, but ask questions. Talk to people. Begin to look for common ground. Also look for the places where your issues have been overlooked. Because you are in Africa, you have opportunities and you have challenges that people in the US and the EU do not. Speak up for your issues. Ask for help if you don't know how to do something or how a process works. As you get more savvy, offer help to people who are new. Most important here, consensus is key. If you disagree with something, speak up. They won't know you disagree unless you say so. If you disagree, you can change the process. It's not quite that easy. As I said, the IETF process is open, but it isn't transparent. The IETF has about 20 years of history layered. And what that means is a lot of the work has already progressed a long way, and many of the internal processes are very, very Byzantine. There's lots of administrative overhead. There's a very formal process for producing documents and advancing them. Documents have to be produced in a very exact way. They're text-based. There's a very formal structure. There's also a special sort of insider language. Every working group has specific terms where they refer to the way they're doing things internally in a protocol. For instance, in MPLS, you have bundles. In Layer 3 VPN, you have stitching. These concepts are somewhat the same, but not exactly, and you wouldn't want to think one was the other. It takes a while to catch up. There are also a lot of sort of insider jokes. For example, working group names often are made into acronyms which spell out funny words. Who would guess that lemonade actually had to do with extensions to email protocols? It's not always, as a new person, to figure out which group, working group you are interested in and want to join because the names are a bit obscure. There are also lists of well-known characters who participate on mailing lists, both good and bad. There are people that you want to listen to when they post who are longtime participants in the group and have been active in standards development. They know what they're talking about. There are also people who are, kind word, gadflies, and you may get sucked into a side discussion that's been argued many, many times and that there's not agreement on. Check the list archive and make sure that you want to engage this person in conversation before you respond to them, or you may get stuck in a conversation you don't want to have. I said the structure was Byzantine. This is the top-level administrative structure of the IETF. You don't even need to know what most of these bodies are to get started. You can completely ignore this structure. As you move up through the process, some of these things, like the IESG and the IAB, may begin to be important to you. You may never need to deal with them. This is a bit more important. Work in the IETF is divided up into areas, and within those areas there are working groups. So you may want to identify the areas where you're interested or where you have expertise. And these are the general areas. Did everybody get a copy of the IETF Journal? The IETF Journal has some very nice articles in it that lay out various areas' current work, and it will describe what happened in working groups at a recent meeting, what was active work, where they are now, what they think the coming issues are. If you read through this and match it up to the area or the working group that you're interested in, that's a good way to jump in. It's also available online, Miriam says. The actual flow of work in the IETF begins with an initial idea. And that can be one person, that can be a small group of people. They take that idea to informal discussions, usually by email, and then they get approval to have a meeting that's called a birds of a feather meeting, a BOF, a birds of a feather meeting, at an actual IETF meeting. Out of that process, they may start a working group. This is where you want to jump in. When you're new, you don't want to be part of this process. It's very complicated. You want to jump in where the work has already started and where you can get some background to get started. A couple of strategies for getting involved. Start in the middle, so join a chartered working group. Join a working group that matches your interest or area of expertise. Don't jump into something like MPLS or whatever that's a high-level advanced topic but not something that you're already expert in. Start where you know things. Get to know people. Move up. Follow authors or drafts that you already know. So if you've already been reading all of the drafts related to implementing IMAP or implementing DNS because you're the top-level domain holder for your country, find a draft that you like and follow that draft to find the working group or the authors that you want to work with. There are a couple of sites that will help you. Each of these is, you'll notice, none of these have the same base URL. Things are not all that well organized. So this is on the actual IETF website, but this is a subset of the IETF. This is a group of people writing tools. This is the RFC editor site where finished documents go to be processed and to live. This is a personal website for an IETF volunteer who's sorted things based on authors. Each of these things is a tool that's interesting to you. We already looked at the charters page, but let's talk about that for just a minute. If you picked Lemonade as a group that you thought you were interested in, off that page, the actual charter will tell you who chairs the group, and it will tell you how to join the mailing list. It also gives a brief description of the work that's expected to be done in the group, and it has a list at the bottom of all the work that's active or has been processed through the group. The charters are useful for the basic description of the work going on in the group and the information about joining the mailing list. But the tools page is better for getting actual details about the working group. For instance, if you're interested in V6 Ops, the tools page, and you can find all of these down along the edge here, you have to know the acronym. So you have to go to the charter page first to know the acronym to find this page, which does a better job of showing you what documents are active or processed, and it gets you to the mailing list archive. So two separate tools to do the same thing. The other nice thing about the tools site is it has what's called related documents at the bottom. You'll notice that the naming convention for all of these documents up at the top includes the acronym for the group, and it starts with IETF. That means it's an official working group document. If it starts with a person's name, that's an individual draft. That's somebody working in the working group who's submitted personal work that the group hasn't accepted yet. In some cases, these documents will be accepted into the group as group work. In other cases, these documents may advance as personal documents all the way up through publication. You'll notice Jordy has a personal document in V6 Ops right now. The RFC editors page, as I say, includes all of the published RFCs as well as several search engines that will let you search things like current documents. These search engines are really nice. They are divided up into current drafts and actual published RFCs, and they make a distinction between those two things. An internet draft is a document that has not yet been approved as a standard. That means people are still working on it and the document can change. Technically, you're not supposed to implement from a draft because it can change. People sometimes do. A couple of examples. Anybody here know Joe Abley? Anybody in track one, track? If you know Joe, he's authored a recent document on Anycast. Some of you may know that there is an instance of a root server here in Kenya. That box is Anycast, partly based on work that Joe has done. You can follow the author's tool to find Joe, and then follow the charter to find the GROW charter, and then the working group to find the GROW group. GROW, and this is another one of those cases where the acronym doesn't essentially tell you much. It actually means Global Routing Operations. Not the most intuitive name, but if you know Joe and you're interested in his work, you can find this group. Following a draft. This is probably the easiest way into really relevant work for what you're working on right now. Alan Barrett mentioned the current draft during his presentation on policy proposals for the AFRINIC region yesterday. The draft was IDR AS 4 bytes. And there's a clue right here. It says IETF-IDR, which tells you this is the IDR working group. If you go to the actual site for the IDR working group, you'll find a slew of documents, and you'll see that much of the current work on BGP is being done in IDR. IDR means interdomain routing. You won't find a working group that says BGP. If you're interested in BGP, you need to follow the draft to find IDR. Anybody looking for an opportunity to write your first internet draft? There's an informational RFC with several well-known authors. That would be Zita Wenzel and Randy Bush, as well as Steve Huter. And it was published in 2000. This was the Administrative Internet Infrastructure Guide. Some of you have probably used it. It talked about CIDR. It talked about getting address space. It talked about relationships with IANA. This document is now out of date. When it was written, there were only three RIRs, ARIN, the RIPE NCC, and APNIC. This document is ready to be updated. It would require contacting the IANA and the RIRs to get current information. It would be a great jump start for somebody who wanted to publish their first document. As I say, I've been an IETF volunteer for about 10 years, and I still get lost. There are entire areas of stuff that I don't have much interest in, and I totally don't understand. If somebody can explain layer 1, layer 2, layer 3 VPNs and CCAMP to me, see me later. These things make no sense to me, but they don't need to for the work that I do. I've found some good people to work with, and I've found work that I like doing, mostly on the ops side, some of it administrative. There are roles for everyone. The IETF needs more operators, and it needs input from places outside the U.S. and the EU, so find a list and join it. Questions, anyone? If you think you're interested, see me afterwards. Know that most of the instructors that were here participate in some way in the IETF. Philip is part of the educational wing as well as participating in working groups. Joe participates in working groups. Joel has done a lot of support and operational work with the IETF. Feel free to contact someone you know and ask them more questions. Yeah?
Thank you. Alex Corentin from Senegal. I think that mainly the problem we face when we want to join this such a body to discuss and to have more inputs about what is working in the internet is maybe the barrier, the language barrier. Most of the people are, as you said, as using a special wording when they talk in the IETF mailing list. So I don't know how, and maybe a special working group on first level input people can be
helpful. It's true that language is a barrier, and there's a reason for that. If you look historically over time, the IETF grew out of the ARPANET in the U.S., so English was the base language from the early 70s forward. And the next large group of countries to join were also English-speaking. It was the UK. And it's just since the mid-90s that other countries have begun to actively participate. Some of them follow technologies. For instance, a very active participant now is Finland. You can see that Finland joined recently. They joined in like 1998. But now they have the second highest level of participants in the entire IETF. Can you guess why? Anyone guess why? Mobile, Nokia. Nokia and Ericsson. And that's why this number spiked here. But the base language for the IETF is English. So if you're interested in participating, we had a meeting in Paris a year ago. The number of French-speaking participants has gone up. Identify a Francophone participant in a working group that you're interested in and buddy up with them. Try to read the drafts with them. It is hard when you begin. You don't have as big a challenge as the Koreans or the Chinese. So, other questions?
What is the level of participation? Okay, I am David Wakele and I come from Addis Ababa University. And what is the level of participation of Africans, and what do you think Africans will benefit from participating?
As you can see from this graph, which, ooh, not this one. I had a country graph. Where did it go? No, back. There's a distribution of participation. Now, know that these statistics are based on documents advanced or published. There are no documents with African authors, and there are very few documents with South American authors. There are, however, working group participants. Alan Barrett has participated in a number of particularly security and DNS-related working groups. There are African participants. The number is very, very small. Why would you be interested? Particularly in areas like mobile and security, you have special challenges here. And as vendors develop applications, you want to be sure that your needs are addressed. You are much bigger users of satellite links and of wide area radio than other places. India will have your issues. Latin America will have your issues. The EU doesn't have your issues. So if you're interested in things that are going to advance your current infrastructure, you want to participate to at least understand the issues and to know what people are planning. Anyone else? If you have additional questions, see me afterwards.
Thank you, Lucy. We're a little bit ahead in time, so if I could I ask Victor to come and give his presentation now before the break, then we have some more time for discussion later.
Okay, good morning, everyone. My name is Victor Chalo, and for those who are still struggling after watching soccer, I promise you I'll try to be very brief and very fast. My presentation is really an overview of what we discussed over the weekend as educational networks, and I think initially in that meeting we had agreed Buba Kaberi, who is from AAU, will be the one to present. So I'm hoping he's around somewhere, so that all the questions can be directed to him and all the good praises can be directed to me. Now, what we did was to try and look at a number of things, and our starting point was to try and contextualize what you were trying to discuss. We wanted to answer a few questions. Why do we want to invest in NRENs? What are the challenges? What is the role of NRENs in higher education vis-a-vis other networks, connectivity, and maybe content strategies? And then there was a question which kept cropping up about partnerships. How do we develop these networks in partnership with others? We looked at a number of things, and I tried to summarize that based on some work we ourselves are doing here in Kenya. And we realized that institutional networks or campus networks are critical to whatever we are trying to do. So the first day, most of the discussion centered around campus networks, which I've called institutional networks, and there was lots of descriptions about those networks. Then we tried to look at the NRENs on the second level and how they fit into the global picture. Now, the challenges were discussed in form of case studies. We had a few institutions present their networks, and a number of things came out across the board, and the first thing was institutional infrastructure itself in terms of how do the networks look like and what do they need. And it was very clear that as much as there's a lot of networks in most of our institutions, with fiber backbones for most of the institutions, we still needed to do a bit more work in optimizing those networks in terms of the architecture and addressing schemes. In other words, most of our networks are enacted, and there was a lot of discussions and presentations on why that is not really most probably the right way. We did also look at issues of technical support. It was felt that there's a lot which needs to be done to develop both the technical support people on the networks as well as the faculty in trying to use some of those networks. One major point which came out very clearly here is that in most of the institutions, unlike in the north or in Europe, you still get faculty, that is the people working in computer science or in mathematics or in engineering, being the people who are still in charge of the networks. And really, their primary job is not the network. Their primary job is teaching. Networking becomes a secondary job. But the trend is changing. It was felt that that's something which we need to look at. And of course, the usual old story of insufficient funding crop up almost from everyone. And when we were coming to look at ways and means of looking at that, there are quite a number of good ideas on how that can be mitigated. Now, besides the challenges, we also looked at some opportunities which exist as it stands today. The first one was there is a lot of information around today and knowledge on how to plan scalable and easily manageable networks. So it was felt that really there's nothing much lost, and there's a lot which can be done. And the facilitator of the session, I believe it was Dale Smith, had very good suggestions on what can be done here. Dream big, start installing slowly, and keep on growing your network. At some point, it was felt that maybe we need a mailing list where people can post their questions and get them answered. But I think the consensus was the AFNOG mailing list is good enough, and you'll be opening your questions to a big pool of experts out there who are willing to assist. So planning both strategically and for the network implementation was identified as a major opportunity which most people can leverage on today. On capacity development, I think this year we made lots of mileage. The first thing was we don't really want to start creating new bodies and new initiatives. Why don't we leverage on what already exists? That is in AFRINIC, in AFNOG, and any other organizations. And in this front, there was an unanimous agreement that since people like AFNOG Africa already have some MOUs in place, why don't we mandate AAU to take lead and see how we can be leveraging on this? Let me give you a good example. Is that, for instance, the meeting we had rode somehow piggybacked on the AFNOG meeting. So we didn't have really to get people to a different location. Maybe what we need is a track during the AFNOG trainings or to follow the AFNOG methodology and be able to move around with that and get capacity developed. One issue which came up, incidentally, our meeting had more ladies than I'm seeing here today. And one thing which came up there was we were almost conscious of the gender balance in our meetings. And the AFNOG trainers were very willing, especially Sunday, whom I'm not seeing here, to make sure they participate in that training so long as we increase the number of ladies in the meeting. Now, on resources acquisition, well, I wonder why, too. On resources acquisition, we agreed on a number of things, and a few strategies were put in place. There's a lot of data which scientists around the world need, which exists in our region. And they can be used as the main drivers of developing our networks. Good examples came up here, and I think it was from Malawi, where the malaria program has some funds. And for them to be able to work with the other researchers they were working with, they were willing to fund a bit of the infrastructure and connectivity. And I do know also in this region we have some collaboration between some researchers who are members of our network